Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine here, and welcome to another episode of the We Are Women podcast. With me today, I have Rhiannon Elton. Now, Rhiannon is a fantasy detective author, so it's going to be interesting. I can't wait to hear what she's got to tell us. Now, she, as I said, she's a fantasy detective author who's always dreamed the world could be a better place. Rhiannon was raised by a fairy, taught by wizards, and bullied by goblins and trolls. And she soon learned that magic was everywhere in life, and all you needed to do was to find it was simply look. Now, within those lessons, she also learned that magic created the power to achieve your greatest dreams if you only practiced wielding it. From her earliest years, Rhiannon remembers writing stories with her friends and dreaming of having her work published. And as she grew older, she realized that she had the power to do so at the end of her wand, which aka her keyboard. She dreams today of publishing as many works as she can before the last story leaves her dreaming mind. All she wants to do with her stories is to show the goodness and kindness and love always wins. Of course it does. I love that. Even if it doesn't feel like it at the time. So welcome, Rhiannon. This is just going to be so interesting. I just love the concept of the type of books you write.
Thanks for having me, Janine. You know what? Fantasy is just something, sci-fi is considered to be like pre-science, but fantasy, I feel like, is pre-reality for a lot of people.
I love that description. I'm a real fan of science fantasy. And a lot of people who don't know those two genres, science fiction, science fantasy, don't really even realize that there is a difference. But there's a big difference. You know, I want to know that dragons can fly, and you know, rather than aliens killing me off, it's a different world.
Well, that's what I'll try and incorporate. Like, I take a lot of aspects of real life culture from like Celtic and Nordic and every kind of mythology. And then I find out, like, how could that have worked? What's the elements of science that make that believable? Because I love the way this world works. And what if we tweaked it just that little bit?
So that would involve a fair bit of research then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I love it. Like, I'll spend half an hour researching like how particular molecules respond to other ones in order to get magic right in the world of Pew and Teli.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and I suppose then that makes it, you know, when there's that the elements of fact and the science behind things as much as you can have it in a fantasy scope, that it becomes then more real for people and that more believable for people, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how come? I mean, I know I read that you were raised by fairies and taught by wizards. I love that line. It's just awesome. Bullied by goblins and trolls. Oh, gosh, I wish you could just, you know, call people that all the time, couldn't you, who do that? Or explain to children that that's what they are. They're goblins and trolls, and that has a different perspective. But really, you know, when did that love of writing start?
Ever since my mum used to read to me quite a lot, and so she's my fairy. She's my fairy godmother in a way. But she used to always read various stories to me. She raised me on Disney and everything fantasy. It was a bit of an escape for us because we grew up in a pretty impoverished area. And that's where it all started, believing that, you know, that farm boy or that slave girl could actually grow and become so much more than what they were. And I remember my grandma, I don't believe we have any Aboriginal heritage, but grandma raised me on Aboriginal folklore. So she'd tell me like the stories about how things transformed from one to another, and how things that seemed like very non-sentient beings, like trees and rocks, they had a voice and they had movement that was really beautiful, and it grew a sense of empathy for everything around me. And so everything had a little bit of magic, whether it was alive or not in scientific terms.
Oh, and as a child then, looking at the world, what did you see?
Oh, all sorts of things. I remember this one instance because I used to play in the garden heaps and get outside, bring my Barbie dolls into the garden. They'd all be fairies because they're about fairy size. And I remember one time Grandma was like, oh, can you see the fairies in the garden? And I went up and she'd actually hidden these little fairy statues for me in the garden. And I went out and I touched them and I was devastated because she's like, oh, no, don't touch fairies. They turn to stone if you touch them. And so I had these little porcelain statues and I thought I'd turned the fairies to stone.
Oh, no, that would have been tragic.
But then there are other instances, like if you've got a mulberry tree in my family, we call it a fairy tree because the berries and the leaves bring fairies and that sort of stuff.
I'm going to have to start using that with my grandchildren because we've got a mulberry tree in the yard. So that just that world of make believe and imagination, it just enlarges on that, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to consider some ideas and things like that because I've got lots of ornamenty things around the gardens, and they love that. They love finding the creatures and things. So yeah, I could really build on that actually.
One thing that we used to play with is if there were statues in the gardens, like gnomes, it was a thing that, they'll always go back to the same spot when you're looking, but when you're not looking, they'll run around and they'll do things for the garden if you keep it in good health.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a bit like that, the movie Gnome, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that.
Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, so good. it's just, I don't know, I believe it. It doesn't matter what age, does it? So, yeah. So learning, you know, that, and I know you sort of looked, it's a different way to see the world, isn't it? And so that's what got you into the writing as well. You know, one thing is seeing it, but actually putting ideas down on paper and creating books is quite different.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, sorry. My alarm is just telling me, oh, yeah, I've got to do things and it's messed up because of the Android update. But, yeah, so leading into writing, it started to happen the moment I learned how to write. I remember I had a grade two teacher at one stage tell us a story about someone who found a dinosaur egg and they had to raise it, and then when it grew too big and for the bathtub, they released it into the wild. And I was just enthralled because I loved animals, and I was like, oh, what if you did find a giant egg and it was a dragon or it was another kind of dinosaur, because my favorite was Brontosaurus. And so what if you found this baby animal and you had to raise it and care for it, and what sort of stuff would that happen? And all through the back of my school books, my teachers would tell me off because I'd always written stories from the back page into the book, and I'd run out of space.
Wow. So, yeah, it's getting that story down then, isn't it? You know, that's part of it. It's not just having that imagination but being able to write it. So how many books have you written now?
Technically, I've written 9, but I'm just about to publish the first one properly. I had published 6, but I withdrew them because I read back over them. I'm like, nah, it's not good enough at the moment. So I only had them up on Amazon. I think only about 50 people saw them. And then I actually pulled it back and I was like, no, I've got to make this spectacular and then I'll re-release it. So the first one is now touched up. It's all completed and at a much higher standard. I'm really quite proud of it now.
Excellent. And that's the thing, is you do want to be proud of what you do as well. That's an important factor. And because this is sort of a bit of a continuing story, isn't it? And so it's a fantasy detective.
Yeah. So this story that I'm putting out is about Wolflock. So he is my Sherlock Holmes homage, and there are 151 books planned in this series. Now people go, oh, that's a lot of books, but They're not very long books. They're about the same length as the normal Sherlock Holmes stories. So they're ones you could read on the train or on the bus or in your lunch break, and they only go for about an hour or two, if you, depending on your reading speed. Mm-hmm. So they're just short stories, but they all have one mystery within them, and they all interlock with each other.
So you've set yourself a pretty high standard. How come you decided on 151? You know, that's a unique number just to pull out, Rhiannon.
Well, I thought it was quite charming because I was a big Pokemon fan. And the first set, first lot of Pokemon, there was 151, but it worked out because in the continent that Wolflock is actually living in, there's 13 states, and then there were a couple of extra stories in different places. So there's 20 stories of him growing from 18 to about 22, where he's studying at a university. There's 5 stories where he goes back home for a holiday. And so the numbers got thrown out a little bit. And in the last portion, there's 15 stories to round it off nicely to 150. And then the final book is going to be the full novel where everything sort of gets wrapped up and brought back in. And by that stage, he's in his 30s.
Wow. Okay. It really does sound intriguing. And I suppose that's part of, I mean, I've written nonfiction, but writing fiction, you have to plan, I would assume you have to plan the end, maybe not that far out with that many books and what you're doing, but I love the concept, but you have to be able to see the end to get to the story, don't you?
Sometimes the end sort of just grabs you and it's like, no, this is where we're going. And other times it's like, well, I want this particular scene and this feeling to come through, and I'm not sure how that's going to end yet. So it depends on how much you've planned and what sort of note taker you are, really. Some people just go scene by scene and let it take them on a journey too.
I'm always quite amazed at, you know, and look, there's, you know, the formula there to write the books and build that suspense and then, you know, to have a resolution at the end. And you've got love interests as well, is it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I find that the original Sherlock Holmes, he was a bit asexual. Like he had Irene Adler, but he was more an admirer of hers rather than a proper love interest. But Wolflock definitely has a few love interests along the way.
Okay. Well, that's always an important factor as well.
Yeah. You know what? I love romance, and I'm a fantasy author, but I love a good romance, and the romantic subplots of books are that's what I live for. I love them.
Yeah. And when the character develops, and obviously the relationships get the opportunity to develop and change as well. So that would be a real bonus of having more than one novel.
Absolutely. And the progression, like I can't give away any spoilers, but like there's a consistent character that Wolflock doesn't even know that he likes the company of until like the moment where she leaves, and it's like, oh no. So, oh, those heartfelt moments. I love them. the ones that give you feels.
Yeah. I know. I listen to books. That tends to be how I get the opportunity, unless I'm on holidays and then I get a chance to read. But I listen to books all the time. And I was listening to one yesterday and I was getting towards the end and I'm thinking, I want to turn it off because it's too intense, but no, I want to listen to it because it's I've got to hear what happens. No, I want to turn it off. No, I want to listen. Yeah. It was just, and when a book can really get you as much as that, you know, that you know that it's been written well, and when they're read, they actually get a chance to read them well as well. So that was a difference with that one too, but.
Yeah, absolutely. I read faster than I write or that I actually listen to things. So if someone sends me a video, I'm like, can I fast forward this? So it's not keeping up with my brain speed. So yeah. I love audiobooks, but I often put them on a little bit faster if we've got the option.
Oh, okay. I've never thought of doing that. Yeah, it depends where you're listening to it, of course, as to whether you can do that or not. Now, you know, I imagine that you said that you had written them and then you weren't happy with them and you've gone back and rewriting them and launch them again. And I know you're in business as well. So tell me a little bit about your business so that just so the listeners know that, you know, there's a lot more to you than an author, because I'm really impressed with everything that you do.
Thank you. I'm actually an acupuncturist, and that's how I make my bread and butter, up in Holland Park. But the author side of things is going from hobby to business. I release the books and I look at it now, I'm like, yeah, no, that was definitely hobby. I didn't have the experience or the knowledge or the resources that I do now. So my acupuncture job pays for my author job at the moment, because the first book's being released. We haven't taken any money for it yet. But yeah, so when people think about, oh, you know, you just write a book and release it and then that's it. And that's so simplified. There's so much more of a process to do it successfully. And a lot of authors are afraid of doing the business side of things, but I love it. I absolutely adore doing business, and I love getting out there and speaking to people and contacting people about these things and asking people questions about like how they've done it successfully. And yeah, I thrive on business.
Yeah, and that's going to be a good balance for you, because I know I've spoken at authors groups, and a lot of the authors, a large percentage that I spoke to, just really balk at that idea of having to sell their ideas and sell the concept of their books, and they just wanted to write. That was all, you know. It really didn't matter if people bought it, but they just wanted to write. So what issues have you come across, you know, within your business and that you have found that you will be able to address in writing the book, in promoting your books as well? Do we have a title for the books? Can you share that yet or not?
So let's see. Oh, yes. The title for the first book is The Case of the Captain's Hair.
Right.
And the series of the books is The Wolflock Cases.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
There's so many other stories. Like, we've got the Wolflock Cases, and they are the most present date ones. But there's so many stories associated with the history of the continent that Wolflock is in, Puentealai. So I've got about 100 stories outside of Wolflock that are, and they're proper novel sized stories that are all associated with the different states and the different countries and all the various people and their journeys through life as well. So, but coming back to the business side of things.
Oh, I'm just going to say, I love your enthusiasm with the books though. You can tell that you absolutely love it. And I think that's a really important part of when you do anything and particularly write, is that you absolutely love what you're doing. So
I don't shy away from, like, there's no aspect of this that I don't enjoy. So I think that's something that was trained into me from running my own acupuncture clinic and now being sort of a partner with the current one that I'm in as well. And all of that started from when I worked on cruise ships and I was responsible for the money that I made. It was all on me. No one else was accountable for it. It was all my doing, whether I sank or swam on the cruise ship.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what were you doing on the cruise ship, just out of interest too?
I was on a cruise ship for 8 months doing acupuncture in the spa.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a different sort of thing too. That would have been a nice little interesting interlude in your life and in your career.
It was heavy training. That's what it was. It was very intense. I absolutely loved it. But that's where I got the confidence to do business better. Like, I was very timid before I went on cruise ships. I wasn't very timid, but I felt very uncomfortable with business sides of things. But when I was on the cruise ship, I had to write my reports, I had to do my numbers, I had to justify my numbers, and I also had to give talks regularly to try and bring more customers in. So that was a big thing.
Yeah, I can imagine it was. So, and issues around that too. You know, what's been the growth points that you can share?
Oh, this massive one. So it started off not knowing that I could actually ask other people for assistance. and feeling like I was a burden on them if I did ask them for assistance. But I had one of my mentors tell me that when you ask for help, that's the biggest sign of respect for whoever you're asking. So it shows that you respect them that much that you would ask them for assistance and education in that area.
Yeah, so that's a good lesson, because there's no, that's something that women in particular don't do well, as ask for help. And I wrote a little blog about that the other day, and it's because we're, I don't know where, you know, our mothers, our grandmothers, and, you know, community, society gifts us with this ideal that we have to be fantastic at everything, perfect, and, you know, ensuring that we're good at mother, good partner, we can have the household done, we can run a business and look glamorous at the same time. And it doesn't exist in the real world. You can't do those things yourself. The people that look like they're doing, they've got 100 helpers in the background doing things. So yeah, knowing how to get someone to help is a vital part of a woman in business. You can't know everything. You'd be good at your topic matter, like you're good at acupuncture, you're good at writing, but you can't be good at everything.
I actually think of myself as being a good storyteller. The writing side of things, I always work on. So that's the new task for me, to work on my writing so that it reflects my ability to tell a good story.
Okay, that's a good correction in terminology though too, because it gives you a totally different view, doesn't it? It gives you, and imagine if you're owning that being a storyteller, then that is something that's going to feel quite different.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have to sit there sometimes and I'm like, okay, I've written this sentence. It does not say, it's too subtle, or it's like too like ill-placed to say what I want to say. And I have to sit there and I always look up and I wave my hands around and I'm like, I want it to say, and then the words will come. Or it's like, okay, I'm going to say, like, I want to say something like they dashed forward, but I've already used dashed 3 times in the last paragraph. So it's going to be like they ran fast, or they jotted forward. No, they darted forward. No, not quite right. And then I'll find the right word through that process.
Yeah. And look, and that comes to any sort of writing though, you know, because a lot of people listening will be writing just simple things like blogs or marketing material. And it's the same, you know, with your writing, with what you're doing for your novel, you've got to know your target audience and the language, the right language to use for them as well, and then where to place your words. So,
yeah, and the trick is you've got to find it without looking like everyone else. Mm. You've got to have your uniqueness and your authenticity, but you also have to show them that you're similar, but you're definitely different.
Mm. And that's when people go looking for books, you know. So let's say we'll work on someone here that everyone in the world knows as a fantasy writer is J.K. Rowling. So we're, okay, that then is, so that is familiar in people's minds, and then they can sit what you're doing as a, okay, that's, we can do fantasy and we're going to do a detective, you know, and solve crime and solve problems. So it's like anything you do though, you've got to find that point of something I know and can connect with, right, that I've got that clear now. It's whatever sort of writing you're doing, people have to get on, to come with you, they have to associate it with something else, especially in the first instance. Yeah,
they have to feel that sense of familiarity and that sense of, okay, so this person is similar, I have an expectation, but then you can help them grow out of that expectation. But it has to be a process, because if you just, you know, lump them onto something new, most people balk and they're like, ugh, I don't want that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So, so asking for help, you know, is a really, really vital part. And I'm assuming that along your way and of what you've been doing, that there's been other people that have probably walked the same path ahead of you.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing that we all think we're alone when we're starting our own business or when we're just going about life generally. And I think that's one of the blessings of the internet is you can just type in your problem into Google and then suddenly you've got a bunch of people that are suffering from the same thing and you can help each other grow out of it. I always prefer a physical person though. So if I have the option to call someone up or to have a Zoom meeting with them or to have coffee with them, I will choose that over just text.
Mm. Yeah, and that way you I know I've just been emailing somebody this morning and it, in the end I just pick up the phone because you just to get clarification, that's a much better way to do it. But yes, finding somebody and you know, most people are really quite helpful on if you ask them the right questions and you respect them in their knowledge and what they do. I know I have people that, you know, will come to me and ask for ideas on things and I'm quite happy sharing. And then there's people that just don't respect that. There's another level as well, but it's, and especially when they know you're quite generous with your stuff as well. So
I've got two pet hates with that. The person that asks for everything but does nothing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some patients like that when I first started out in acupuncture. And even with writing, I'll have, because I'm a little bit more ahead than some of my peers who love writing, they'll ask me questions. And then their first response when I give them an answer is, oh, no, that won't work for me. And it's like, why did you ask? Like, if you like go, you need to learn this lesson for yourself clearly. And I'm not going to waste my energy and my breath trying to help you with this now. And then you've got the other ones that they want you to do it all for them. Mm. So it's like, oh, I don't know how to do this. Can you help me with it? But really, they want you to sit down and do it for them, and they don't want to have to use their brains.
Mm. Yes. One of the things that I found, and I do appreciate the coaches that have done this for me, so I do this now, is when somebody has an issue with something, either I've already written an article on it and I'll just flick the article, or else I'll go, just if you put that question in YouTube, you'll be able to know how to do that then.
Yes. Redirection.
Yeah. Somebody else has already given you the answers for that. But, yeah, so, hey, look, you said that you do the acupuncture as your means of income, but you know I can't imagine that. You know, you've said that you'd had a fairy for a mother, so that's helpful. But there's lots of us that have got jobs that, you know, people have this expectation of what we've got to do for life and living and bringing income and just, you know, it's a bit different than what you're doing at the moment.
Hmm. The only reason I have acupuncture as my primary profession, I used to do all sorts of things alongside being an acupuncturist. So I used to work in an office. I used to work at Happy High Herbs. That was fun. it was, you know, the one in the valley in Chinatown. I think it's the Happy Herb Shop now.
In Brisbane, yeah, because we've got people listening from everywhere. Yes,
I used to work in that one, and at the time it was commission. I think I've always worked commission jobs except for this one office job that, like, ate my soul. I used to love having that regularity and that sort of, okay, you've got that income for that amount of hours you worked, but it was also really unsatisfying because, like, I put in all this effort. I feel like I should be rewarded a bit more for it, or I want to put in less effort and still get paid the same. And so commission jobs were really good for that because I'm good at talking to people. And when I went to cruise ships, that was the primary thing that I had to do, like, every day in order to bring in more customers to the spa. It was sort of like I built my wings on the way down after I jumped. So I had no idea what to expect on cruise ships. And every day I had to give a seminar on the benefits of acupuncture for these people that were in their 60s and 70s. So I'd bring them in through the talk, and then I had to deliver the results. And it was such a great learning experience because it taught me that I could do it. Like, there was nothing that I couldn't treat, because out of the thousands of people that I treated, because I was treating like 25 people a day, yeah, and that's seven days a week. You don't get breaks on a cruise ship. Mm-hmm. So I was treating all these people. Mm-hmm. I was getting phenomenal results. And I was like, oh, wow, this actually works really well. Like, I was so – I had such trepidation about how effective it was. But now I can see that if you treat people every day, you get really good results.
That's a big difference, isn't it? Because especially, you know – any sort of alternative medicine type of thing where you're working on not just dealing with a problem, you're actually trying to work on a cause, which acupuncture treats both, doesn't it? It treats what the cause is as well as relieving the symptoms. And yes, most people go do it once and go, oh, that was okay, that worked, and then it stops or it doesn't quite work and they're not happy with it. But if you do it every day, you get massive results. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, and that then reinforces that the knowing in what you're doing and how you can help people as well.
When I was studying, we'd analyze all these studies coming through, and the majority of them did come from China, and they would be showing that they're getting like 95% of the people in the study got 100% of results. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. Like, what kind of numbers is that? Surely they're faking it, or they've like got the studies wrong. And you look at it and you're like, the only thing that they could be doing is faking the numbers entirely, because they've set the study up, they've written it right, they've done everything. But the difference was that they were treating people daily in those studies, sometimes twice a day. And that's why they were getting these amazing results. And I'm like, huh, it does work.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I hadn't really conceived that aspect of it, but it certainly does make a big difference. Mm. Now, doing, acupuncture is a bit of an alternative type of occupation. A woman writing fantasy is certainly a very different occupation. Is that something women commonly do? Again, you've got J.K. Rowling, which is, most well-known person in that genre. But is that something that you would normally find is men or women or...
Oh, it's typically men, and really, the women that write often get a lot of extra flack, especially if they start speaking out on Twitter or if they like try and stand up for a cause or anything like that. They often get shut down pretty quickly. A lot of women, female writers, will actually go under a male pen name still, and they just seem to be disregarded with what they do in writing. It's slowly changing, and most of my favorite authors are also female. But I've got plenty of male authors that I love, but the majority of the ones that I resonate with best are female. We come up against a lot of different aspects, because the geek community, the ones that sort of support the authors, they're not predominantly male, but the loudest ones are male. And I think that most of the fantasy and sci-fi authors today, they're sort of after they're not after Star Wars fans anymore. Like, they don't want people that are like the old Star Wars fans. And I think people like Disney are doing a good thing about trying to change what's happening there.
I'm an old Star Wars fan.
I don't mean it like that, but most of the new Star Wars actors actually have to shut down their social media accounts because they're copping so much abuse from the fat neckbeard nerdy male fans.
That's really bad.
It's terrible. So I think that women do get scrutinized a bit more when it comes to putting out creative artworks, like writing and drawing and cartoons and that sort of stuff. It's slowly changing, and I think that the more that people, like, they don't care if you're male or female, the better result and the better content people are able to deliver. Mm. But if they're just like, oh, yes, this person, rather than, oh, this woman.
Yeah. And I know there still is an issue in business as well, and it really depends on the market and who you're dealing with. And I had spoke to someone the other day, and we had about an hour long discussion on the opposite side of the pendulum as well, and it was a female sort of working for male rights on certain issues. But I think when it comes down to business, or you know, just it's just that. I don't know, it must be just in our subconscious still that men have better ideas or better knowledge or more experience or something. And it's a shame. I don't like say that lightly, but it's somewhere in the subconscious mindset. Hence why, you know, if you went and looked at all of the business books out on the market, the percentage of women's books are quite low compared to the percentage of men's books and the popularity of them. It's not that they're better writers. It's just that the perception is that if a male writes a book on selling, then it's going to be different and better than a female necessarily writing it, or just more popular or more reason to purchase it. Yeah, it's...
There's three things that, I'm having a coffee-induced idea storm. Mm-hmm. But there's three things I noticed about that. Like with men, they're mostly the biggest successful motivational speakers, the majority of them are male. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason is that I find that female motivational speakers, they're just trying to get women to feel like they're good enough. Mm-hmm. Whereas male motivational speakers are like, no, you're already good enough. You're now a champion, or you're like the best there is, and you've got to own that. And it's like, well, women need that too. Mm. Then there's also that men typically are raised with more confidence. They're not restricted physically by what they wear, and they're given the old excuse that boys will be boys. So if they act up, some people brush it off, whereas when girls act up and they're trying something new, they're often shut down a lot faster. And so I feel like a lot of mums need to be careful about how they speak to their young girls and how they try and redirect their attention. So if a young girl is wanting to take apart a broken radio to see what's going on inside, for heaven's sake, don't stop her. Encourage her. Get her some screwdrivers. Mm. If they want to do something, encourage whatever they want to go for and treat them like their attitude is actually like their attitude towards it. Encourage it. Make sure that it's helped and nourished, because I've heard it so much because I used to work in childcare. Girls were always redirected to the dolls, to being soft and serene and calmer, but the boys were given so much leniency. Like they'd be climbing on the outside of the play equipment and they'd be like fighting each other with swords, and like not real swords, just like foam ones or sticks. Yeah. And the teachers just sort of shrug and they're like, oh, I don't have the energy to stop them. But if it was a girl doing it, they'd get onto it really fast, as if they're made of glass.
Mm. Yeah, that having grandkids, you want to encourage them to do whatever. A lot of it comes down to nature, and it's just what they just tend to go to. And raising a couple of boys, they just tend to want to be outside climbing. I tried to shove girls outside, but they didn't want to go. But
well, it depends on what age they're at as well.
Correct,
so
yeah.
if they want to go out at, you know, 2 or 3 or 4, when they start, like between the ages of 2 and 4, children take everything literally. They can't discern what a lie is. So if you're telling a child that they're smart and they're brave and they're beautiful at that age, that becomes their truth. Whereas later on, if you're if you're telling them at 6 or 7, oh, yes, no, go outside, but all of those formative years you've told them to stay inside and be safe, then they're not going to go outside.
No, I agree. And I've mentioned this on a couple of podcasts before, but I do that with my grandson. You know, we talk about how brave and how much courage he has and how he's ready to take on stuff. And I do that with the granddaughter as well. It's more innate in her personality, actually, that she'll just go and do things. But just sort of take it on. We've got a little bit distracted on that, but it's a really interesting topic. And I actually have not heard that comment before about the male motivational speakers having a higher expectation for what women can do. And I'm going to pay attention on that because I really think that is a very important factor, that of course we can do it. There's no reason why women can't do things.
Well, it's not even that. We are already capable of doing all of this. We are now the champions. We're now beyond what we think we're capable of.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I know you've made a comment before about, and I want you to clarify, releasing the workload of parenting your family. And I think that's part of what women do as well. You made that comment to me, and I'm just bringing it up now. So how do you explain that? What do you mean by that? And it's a little bit of where we've gone with this conversation, isn't it?
As an acupuncturist, I treat a lot of women going through various forms of stress and anxiety. And I've found that the worst ones will say, I'll ask them, okay, so who does most of the housework at home? And they're like, oh, I do. And I'm like, okay, well, what does your husband do? Or, you know, what other adult you live with, what do they do? Or teenage children? Well, no, they're quite good. They do the laundry once a week. And it's like, mm-hmm, that's great. You need to make them raise their standards a bit so that they act as an active participant of the house. My fairy mother once told me as a teenager, and I think this is where it stuck with me, that as someone who lives in the house, I am an active participant and I am a member of the household, and there is an expectation of members of the household.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that a lot of women will marry a man and then allow him to be a boy and just be a second mother to him.
Mm.
And that's unacceptable. Women cannot cope with that level of stress to start with. But then it does a disservice to men, and it lowers the standard of what we should expect from them. If they're going to be wonderful and glorious human beings like they should be, they need to up their game, and we need to not let them slack off. So it's not about you need to do the dishes or you need to do that. It's having a serious conversation with them and saying, okay, I expect this level of communication and this level of teamwork within the house, because you are a team together. There should be equal contribution, not just within money. So I find that a lot of men come home and then they turn on the TV, or they start playing computer games, or they start doing something that's not an active portion of the household. Whereas women come home and then they'll do the dishes and they'll still cook dinner and then they'll get the kids ready for school and they'll make the lunches and they'll sort out the bills. And I find that the majority of stressed women are parenting their husband as if he's a young teenage boy.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
So you need to release that in order to drop the stress from yourself and to honor the man that you're with, or the woman that you're with, depending on however you go. But you need to not parent your partner, and you need to set up that boundary, because they're not going to set up that boundary. They've got it easy.
Mm. So, that's a whole lot of good points in there. So is that how you've actually written your book with your main lead character? Is he a...
At the moment, Wolflock is a spoiled brat, but he was raised by an affluent family and he had high expectations of who he would be. His mother was also kidnapped, essentially, and taken away when he was only 4. So his father did everything in the house. He had that representation, and he never thought that a man should slack off. So in future stories, when he sees this in men, he pulls them up on it. He's like, that's not very adult-like. Like, why are you acting like a child?
I love this character already. He's brilliant.
Oh, he's so funny, but he's such a spoiled brat. If anyone's read the Artemis Fowl series, he is probably a little bit similar to the main character. Like, he's a bit pompous. He looks down his nose at everyone. It doesn't matter who they are because he's just so much smarter than them. And of course he gets knocked off his high horse occasionally as well, which is always good fun. But yeah, so he's essentially what I would have seen a young Sherlock Holmes to be, and then he grows into being a more well-rounded, still a little bit, you know, overconfident and cocky, but he grows into that sort of suave Sherlock Holmes that the original stories portrayed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's, I can't wait to read it, actually. It sounds fabulous.
It's only short as well, so most people can blow through it in like an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Brilliant. So when are you releasing it, actually?
It should be released. So I am intending on having a book launch at In-House Publishing on the 29th of October. So that's in Underwood, I believe, on Parramatta Road.
All right,
in
so
Logan.
We may probably won't have this launch by then. I will see what I can do in rearranging some of the things to see that it is launched or not. But either way, it will be available after the 29th anyway. Yeah.
Yes. You'll still be able to find us at Supernova. You'll be able to buy the book at In-House Publishing as a hard copy or Amazon as a digital copy.
Yeah, no, fantastic. So we've got some takeaway points that we've covered. It's really diverse because, you know, because you've got such a diverse level of experience in things, it's the conversation's been well spread as well. Is there points in particular that you want people to take away, Rhiannon?
Oh, definitely. So the first thing is get rid of all the people that tell you you can't do something. Mm-hmm. There is, like, you can't is, okay, the only word you shouldn't apply that, the only term you should apply that to is I can't settle. So I can't settle for less.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, I innately believe that everyone has the potential to do anything that they want to do at any age. Like, I know this 80-year-old woman who every year goes back to uni and learns a new language.
Wow.
And so there's no limit on what people can do. But if you're surrounding yourself with people that tell you you can't do things, people that waste their time and money on mundane things or things that hurt them, you need to eliminate those people from your life and begin to surround yourself with people that stop you from saying I can't and tell you, okay, well, why do you tell yourself that you can't do it? Why are you saying that to yourself? Because it's not true.
Yeah, absolutely. I call them dream stealers. You know, they're stealing your dreams from just because they don't have the same dreams and they can't see themselves doing it. Sometimes they do it trying to protect you, but it's actually not protecting you. It's harming you. But yeah.
Those dreams, I'm going to use that now. I'm going to have a demon that's a dream stealer. But those people are coming from a place of fear. They're not coming from a place of love. They're afraid, and you don't have to be. We live in such a beautiful world, and there's nothing to be afraid of when you know you can accomplish anything that you put your mind to.
So, another takeaway point?
Letting go of needing to control everything. Now, I think this comes back to the parenting thing that we were talking about earlier. You're allowed to release things. Nothing is perfect, but nothing has to be perfect in your mind because everything is already perfect. Everything is as it's meant to be, and you only can control yourself. That is the only thing in life you can control. You can control what you eat, how you speak, what you do with your time, but you cannot control the weather or how other people think or if the cleaning gets done on time if you've asked someone else to do it. You cannot control anything outside of yourself. So you need to let go of the need to control everything.
Yes, and that's one of the biggest things, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. And we can't control things. As you said, you can't control things. You can only control our response to things. That's it. Yeah,
yes.
No, that's a really, really great tip. And the third tip as well.
Definitely get someone that's going to hold you accountable. You don't want to stop. You don't want to stop your progress by being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then you never do it. And so you never move forward in life where it's like, oh, I really want to do this. And then you don't have someone to help you develop a plan to make that happen. So again, it's just surrounding yourself with people that help you do the things that you really want to do, but get a good business coach. You can go through them, like choose one that suits you really well. And eventually you might outgrow that business coach. I've outgrown like 3 business coaches. And it's so important to just, you know, respect them, respect the lessons that they've given you, but respect yourself enough to move on to where you are, what level you're at.
Absolutely agree. And I'm the same. I've had a business coaches all the way along, and I usually sort of find a particular topic or subject that I want to improve on and do that over time, and you get a coach to do it. You end up, your coaches get more skilled as you get more skilled and more information and more value to bring. And they get more expensive too, which is fine. But it's,
you know what? You should be earning more.
Absolutely.
So you can afford that expense.
That's exactly what happens. So you end up doing that. Now, the whole thing, not just those takeaway points, it's just really interesting. And as usual, whenever I'm doing any of these interviews, they go, oh, Masah, the time goes really, really quickly. And I'm really keen to get to know Wolf Lock a lot better. And that sounds, you know, exactly like my type of book. And I can't wait till it's released. So, and I've actually written down that date in my diary so that I can make sure that it's available. I'd love to go to the reopening, the launch of it, which will be terrific. Now, how can people get in touch with you and sort of follow you to find out what's happening? What's the best way?
The best places at the moment would be to either find me on Facebook, which is Rhiannon D. Elton, author, or if you go straight into the URL, it's facebook.com/Rhi D. Elton, E-L-T-O-N, and you'll be able to find me through that. Or pop me an email at info@RhiannonEltonAuthor.com. You can check out our website. I am having a couple of technical difficulties with the blog section, but that's at RhiannonEltonAuthor.com.
Okay. And look, I'll have the links up here on the podcast notes anyway, so people will be able to click that through. But, and Rhiannon, just for those that need to know, it's RHiannon Elton, Elton, and then author. So that's, and it's great to sort of see what you're up to, and then when everything happens and you launch, and it's, you know, we've gone from the magic of fairies and wizards, and we've talked about, you know, young children and getting help and even cruise shipping. Cruise shipping. That's not a word.
You know what it is now.
And
acupuncture. Gone on to dream stealer demons.
Yeah, and acupuncture and the benefit. Look, it's, and that's why I love doing the podcast interviews, because, you know, everyone's got such this wealth of knowledge, and it's just such interesting things to share, and what, you know, people get from this is to, you know, again, remember that to hang around with people that promote the greatness within you and will share that they're there for when you've got adversities, but they're also, they're the ones that are your best champions as well. I think that's one of the things that, and let go of things we can't control, but just have people around there. They're going to support you all the time. I love that. Yeah. I was going to say, anything else you want to add that you said?
Well, humans aren't solitary creatures. So we need to surround ourselves with cheerleaders and coaches in our lives. The cheerleaders prep us up and support us. They don't really know what we're doing, but they love us anyway. And they'll just tell us, yeah, you know, you need to keep going for it because I'm here for you. And then you need coaches to push you that little bit harder and challenge you to greatness.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a ton of difference. Well, thank you, Rhiannon. And I will, as I said, all the contact details will be on the podcast notes, and people can get in touch that way. It's been a fun conversation. I have enjoyed it immensely, and I'm looking forward to reading your book.
me too. I've enjoyed the conversation. I've read the book.
Probably more than once.
About 50 times at least.
I know. That's how I got with mine, and my husband read it a few times too, and he's gone, I can repeat this nearly word for word. That's okay. It's all good. Thank you. All right. That's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. If you need to get in touch with me, you can find me on the website JaneneVosper.com. And those should know how to spell it, but I'll repeat that. It's JaneneVosper. That's JaneneVosper.com. And I look forward to people getting in touch, downloading free ebooks, and just sort of letting me know what you enjoy about the podcasts and just having conversation. It's so much fun that way. And that's it for now. And we will be back in touch with the next podcast. Bye.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.